Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Cloudy, 52 degrees right now and going up to 58 today. Maybe some sun later on, highs of 53 tomorrow. 50% chance for showers on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, pretty much. Highs in the mid-50s Wednesday and Thursday. Upper 60s on Friday and Saturday. More of a chance for rain on Saturday. That's in advance of a real cold front. And they're talking about maybe protective measures from freeze on both North and South Shores next week. Alex Hammerstone joins us now, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. How are you doing, Alex?
I am doing great. Happy New Year. It's 22 degrees here, so I'll take your weather anytime.
That's in Cleveland, right?
That's in Cleveland.
And it surprised me yesterday during the playoff game that Buffalo was, for the most part, sunny and like 56 degrees, and you expected blizzard and everything else, but it's a long winter to come. Tell me what's going on with Apple and Siri and eavesdropping and lawsuits.
Sure, Ed, absolutely. And I think for this conversation, it's important to kind of separate out this particular lawsuit from kind of the overall issues, you know, kind of throughout everything with all the data that's gathered. And in this case, Apple's settling, a lawsuit that was claiming that they were kind of collecting information or collecting recordings when people inadvertently activated Siri or the voice assistant, and then sharing that with third parties who would then advertise things based on what were in those recordings. So Apple denies this. They deny that they, shared those recordings with anyone. And, you know, obviously it's a lot of times these things get settled just to kind of avoid further litigation. And it's also important to note that another piece of this was kind of the inadvertent activation, right? So people were claiming that they kind of bumped the button, you know, for the Siri assistant, or it turned on without somebody saying, "Hey, Siri," or whatever the activation word is. And I think any of us that kind of use these technologies, whether it's, you know, Echo with Alexa or Siri, you know, we've all seen the devices kind of pick up on something wrong and kind of activate thinking we had tried to activate it. And so that's not uncommon either.
So I got a text or something from Apple over the weekend about AI being available. And Alex, I'm trying to get through all of this for people that don't understand. Tell me what's going on with AI and iPhones and Apple and so forth.
Sure. So AI is one of those terms that it has a lot of different definitions, you know, it has or different marketing definitions and different ways that people are using it. And we're starting to see kind of AI or artificial intelligence really start to be implemented in a number of different products. Now, of course, it is the hot marketing term. So you may see kind of things that are called AI that are really just kind of, basic IT type technology that's been around forever. Mm-hmm. But it's really seeking to kind of make things, quote unquote, smarter. And so it's going to allow the computers to kind of constantly gather information and kind of come up with kind of more of a picture of who you are or what you're expecting and really respond to you in ways that can be quite uncomfortable sometimes.
So let me get back to the lawsuit for a second. So Apple said that they did have third parties listening to the conversations that people had with Siri or not?
No, they're adamant that they do not share those recordings with any third parties. And, you know, what's interesting about this is because, you know, we talk a lot, you always mention kind of your teapot, right, where you mention a teapot and get that ad. And I think people are very sensitive to the idea of their phone listening to them. You think about where your phone is, you know, it's in the restroom, it's in your bedroom, it's everywhere, right? And people are very concerned about that, and it's certainly people should be concerned about their privacy. But in general, all these companies that are out there and tons of companies we don't really hear about or think about are collecting our data and aggregating it all the time. And marketers and companies have such accurate pictures of who we are and what we buy and what our preferences are that they don't necessarily need to be listening to our conversations. You know, it's interesting in this case, in the specific Apple case, I think one of the complainants was mentioning that they were served an ad for Air Jordans, right, after discussing it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you're targeting ads, right, I mean, if you're of a certain age, you know, you're probably going to get served ad for Nike shoes. So it's really tough to kind of draw that line or get that proof.
So why does it seem like you're talking about something with a friend and the next day you start getting ads for it online? And you mentioned Teapot. It wasn't Teapot. It was actually Alexander Hamilton. No, Alexander Burr that we were talking about, whoever had a duel. I think it was him, right? And for whatever reason, then I started getting stuff on him. So when we, and maybe we should take a break first, so you can pick it up when we come back. So when we say, Siri, what is this? When I type into the phone the other day, I was looking for something, as a matter of fact, about pro-death penalty groups. And it's like, are there any pro-death penalty groups? I just Googled that, and what came up was some kind of overview saying there are no currently there are no pro-death penalty groups. So when I say Siri, when I say Alexa, when I say, I don't know, are there any male assistants or not?
You can set up your assistant to kind of have the voice you want. You can give it a male voice if you want.
So when we do that, I just want you to kind of take us back to Siri 101. Who exactly or what are we talking to? Who's listening? How do they determine that? And how reliable is the information? And then you got to factor in, well, who's advertising? What results are advertising based? Algorithms, all that stuff. Because I think a lot of us just use this stuff, Alex, and we don't really know what's going on or why. Alex Hammerstone is our guest, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. If you have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. If you have any, again, questions or comments, because I don't know that anybody besides Alex understands all of this. Do you understand it all, Alex?
I'm doing my best every day to learn more and keep up with it, right?
And that's from Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. So don't beat yourself up. 820 Traffic Now, WWL. 826, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec, about iPhones and smartphones and eavesdropping. And when it comes to something simple as Siri, what is this? Or, you know, I did a Google search. Are there any groups that support the death penalty? And I get an AI overview that comes back and says, yes, there are groups that support the death penalty, including Republican Party, blah, blah, blah. So I guess the point I'm making, Alex, is when we say Siri, who are we asking? Who's responding to this? Is anybody responding to this? Who's listening to it? Who generates that answer when you ask a question, not necessarily about a product? Is it algorithm driven? You got 3.5 minutes. Go ahead. Explain it all.
So as far as kind of who they are, I mean, they're computer programs, right? And as opposed to when you go and search for something on Google, where you're typing it and then it gives you back the results kind of as words, you know, the voice assistant is adding another layer, right? So you're able to ask it something. It then turns your words your spoken words into a search, and then it searches, and then it brings the search back, and then it reads it out loud, right? So those are all kind of different technologies that we're familiar with, right? Voice recognition or you know, so on and so forth. When it comes to those AI overviews that kind of are showing up on search engines these days, I think the way to think of it is this. If you were to have a question, and you might go out and search 10 or 15 different sites, right, and kind of look for answers and try to figure it out and aggregate that information. But if you asked me, if you're like, hey, Alex, can you figure this thing out? I would go look at 15 sites and then give you back a summary. So these AI kind of overviews on these search engines are basically doing the second, right? You're asking it a question. It's going to look across and kind of search the web and then come back to you with all the different answers it found kind of in a paragraph format. So it feels more like talking to a person. When it comes to kind of who's listening, that's a more complex answer or a more complex question. Because, you know, generally with these voice assistants, they organizations are pretty open that they do listen to certain calls to kind of for quality assurance, as they say, right? Just to make sure that the assistant is interpreting the questions or the words as intended. But all these different companies are pretty adamant that they're not sharing those recordings with third-party marketers. That's a little bit different than, you know, everything else, right? When you're searching the web and kind of surfing the web and whatever else. That information generally is shared everywhere, right, with all kinds of marketers, and it's put into a profile about you. and you're oftentimes served ads either because of who you are as an individual or because of your demographics, right? So your age and your location and things like that. So somebody who's 65 might get ads for cruises, and somebody that's, you know, 22 might get ads for, disco clubs.
Alex, let me jump to this real quick if I can, because I wanted to get in. I promised. I have a platonic friend. She was on a Bumble, I think it is, Bumblebee dating app, whatever it is. And in the course of it, got a pop-up message saying that somebody was trying to hack her information. Don't do this. Don't do that. What to do? I told her to turn the damn thing off. I that's my suggestion. But then she said when she turned it back on, there was another thing, and she clicked it or something, and it led to another app trying to. I guess the bottom line is, if you have your security that is being compromised, will you ever get a pop-up message from Apple or not?
Generally, no. So if you have a firewall installed or certain security software, it will give you pop-ups. But a lot of nefarious actors will try to mimic those legitimate security alerts. So generally, when you're getting these pop-ups, it's usually a scam, unless you recognize it from being from a specific program you've installed for security purposes.
And as to my advice of turning the damn thing off?
Turning it off is never bad advice.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate it. Stay warm. Alex Hammerstone, we'll talk to you again soon. Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We'll come back. We'll talk to J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council member, about a whole bunch of things. Right now it's time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 8:46, 14 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL, joined by J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Councilman. How you doing, J.P.?
Good, Tommy. How are you doing?
I am okay. Let's talk about, first of all, I know you got an investigation going on, and we don't want to do anything or say anything that would compromise the investigation, but I spoke to Peter Whitford. I don't know if you had any conversations with him yet or not, the CEO of Meridian Rapid Defense Group. Have you spoken to him or not?
I have not. I've had some conversations with a variety of groups that I previously contracted with him, and I believe Meridian is one of the groups they're meeting with to provide some of the temporary bollards for the Super Bowl, as well as potentially Mardi Gras.
At some point, though, the investigation will look into these Archer barriers, how many they had, where were they, putting them out, and all that stuff, right? That's what y'all are looking into?
No, that's actually covered in the Liz Morrell investigation. What we're covering is the permanent infrastructure, the infrastructure that was supposed to be installed in Bourbon Street, the timelines as to when that was supposed to be on board, and more importantly, Tommy, how we ended up with millions of dollars of installed bollards that couldn't stop a go-kart.
So you will not be looking into what Archer barriers they had. That's what Liz Merle's going to do, and where they were stored and all that stuff?
Yes. So the Liz Merle investigation, the Attorney General, deals with the operational deployment of things during New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, as far as what happened immediately before, immediately afterwards. The council investigation is dealing with infrastructure, which is the permanent infrastructure that was supposed to be there, why it wasn't installed timely, and why what was installed isn't sufficient, and why millions of dollars were wasted on it. So it's two separate investigations. There's very little overlap, and that was done very intentionally because, as you know, when you're looking at kind of the operational deployment, that's really a law enforcement issue. And the Attorney General is looking at that from a law enforcement perspective. And also, as you know, because it would be a lot of second guessing of NOPD, Homeland Security, those groups, it was best that a third party who is not affiliated with any of those take that look. We're primarily focused on permanent infrastructure because that is funded with city dollars, taxpayer dollars. That falls within the purview of the New Orleans City Council.
And these Archer barriers were purchased by the city back in 2017. And I'm just wondering, I'm not trying to give you a hard time here, but as far as the Liz Merle investigation is going to look into, did one administration pass along to the next one that we had these things? How were they maintained? Were they ready to go? How deployable were they? Liz Merle is going to look into all of that, right?
Liz Merle is going to look into what was done or not done on New Year's Day leading up to the attack. So basically, if you want to look at a window, that window would be like December 6th from when the FBI sent out the warning that there was going to be a vehicular attack, or the warning there could be a vehicular attack, through New Year's Day. So, I mean,
I guess what I'm asking, JP, in terms of institutional knowledge in the city, having these things, or storing them, maintaining them, according to the owner of the company, it's a pretty easy thing. Virtually no maintenance. He says they've had like the eighth improvement now on the haulers to move them around easily and not easily. It would seem to me like that's something the city council would be interested in, no?
It would. And after Liz's investigation is over regarding the deployment and what things were done or not done on New Year's Day, that's something we'll look into. But right now, our primary focus is on the permanent infrastructure, because if the sidewalk bollards that have been previously vetted had been on, you wouldn't have needed the archers to begin with. So there's a whole bunch of stuff we're looking at, but like there's very clear delineations, because the city council has absolutely no control over operations at NOPD. That is fully within the chief and the mayor. And so, yeah, we're going to look at that at the appropriate time. But right now, our focus is on the things that the council does have oversight and responsibility over, and that is how we spend our money to build permanent infrastructure. I mean, the archers seem to have been able to solve the problem, but if we've known since 2016 that sidewalk bollards were necessary, why were there no sidewalk bollards, and why were the bollards that were installed in the street on Bourbon, why do we spend so much time and so much money to have bollards that could not withstand a vehicle that's less than 1,000 pounds going 10 miles an hour?
All right, let me take a quick break. We'll pick it up. We come back and we'll look ahead to Mardi Gras and the Superdome. A story in a paper today about a last-minute rush, last dash to finish improvements. And I just wondered, somebody was quoted as saying we're doing 10 years of deferred maintenance in 6 months. Why did they wait until 6 months before to do it? And that's not your fault. I understand that. I just want to know about the council's thoughts on that, and also about what Mardi Gras is likely to look at with the SEER 1 rating. And more, J.P. Morrell, our guest, 8:51, 9 till 9. Quick look at traffic on WWL. Right, quickly back to J.P. Morrell, Tommy Tucker, 8:56. Here, did I say WWL? Anyway, J.P. Morrell, let's talk about Mardi Gras. I was talking to Arthur Hardy, and man, he summed it up. He said, you know, you got a guy in a mask walking down the street dragging an ice chest. That's pretty much Mardi Gras. That's also pretty much everything that would attract the attention of the FBI or the Department of Homeland Security and everything else. How much of a challenge is something like that going to be, and how different is Mardi Gras likely to look?
Well, we don't know exactly how different it's going to look, because we haven't really seen what it would be like to incorporate a SEER 1 rating into what Mardi Gras is. But I will say what I've been telling everyone, you really need to expect there to be substantial changes. I mean, the reality is with a SEER 1 rating, you're going to have people at the highest levels of federally and internationally reviewing the security of Mardi Gras. And as I told some other folks, once you get recommendation at the highest level on how to make Mardi Gras safer, how do you not make it safer? How do you actively choose to keep it the way it is if someone's saying that the way you've been doing things is not safe? I don't know. I mean, those experts are coming in as we speak, and I've committed to trying to work with the administration to make sure we're able to get the people what it looks like. But what I will tell everyone, Tommy, is if you walk downtown during Super Bowl, you see the drones, you see the officers, you see the military presence, whatever you see during Super Bowl, that will be Mardi Gras. And that period is not truly defined yet, but I do think it's going to cover both weekends, but I'll get confirmation on that. It's going to be different.
And
we won't even know how different it is till we get closer to it.
People misunderstand this when I say it. I'm not calling anybody out, but I did go to the Sugar Bowl, and I've never felt safer in my life. Drones flying over and everything else. But they still had somebody with an ice chest on the concourse of the Superdome selling drinks without a license and all of that kind of stuff. And look, I don't care about selling drinks. That's not the point. I guess it's about, I don't know how effectively something like that can be done. I really don't know how they're going to do it. Do you have confidence? First of all, JP, scale of 1 to 10, how different do you think it's going to be? 1 being not too much, 10 being a lot different.
I think it depends. I think it's going to be a lot different insofar as it could affect how long our routes are and where those routes start and begin. I think that's something that we're going to look at, because, as you know, even with the uptown route, it has 3 or 4 different places it starts, and there's typically only one endpoint, but I mean, they're going to be real operational, potential operational changes, which could really change how Mardi Gras works. But we'll have to see what those experts say when they come in, Tommy. But I think that as far as the day-to-day experience of catching beads and coconuts, I don't think that's going to change. But who's on the route and what the routes look like, that could.
You have to come back because there are already some changes in place already that we have not spoken about. We will. Thank you, J.P. J.P. Morrell, New Orleans City Council. Remember, we'll come back. We'll talk to Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, about Bill Bratton, consent decree, and more.